Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Window Boxes. I'm really pleased that we have as our guest this afternoon Claire McDonald. She is the MD of HGI Global SE UK and Ireland, and she's got over 30 years' experience in our industry. From what I know of Claire, from being as part of the iWin committee, she's got a great social conscience. And is an active mentor and supporter of young women. I know that's one of her passions in making sure that young women get supported through our industry. But this afternoon, the idea about Window Boxes is to share some thoughts and ideas about an area of work or their life that people are passionate about. And so, Claire, I'm going to ask you, what are you going to be sharing with us this afternoon?
Well, I thought we'd talk today about being yourself and having the courage to be yourself.
Okay.
Perhaps in environments that... you feel that there's a certain pressure or a certain inclination to maybe hide some aspects of your personality or behave a certain way to fit in.
Okay.
This is applicable both for men and women.
Okay. And, you know, has there been some instances that you've seen or that you felt yourself when you've not been able to be yourself in your career?
I think there's probably been quite a few, actually. When I came up to London in 91, I went through a phase of working in men-only teams as the only woman in the team. And I don't think, you know, for many people that might be listening to this, that are perhaps of a certain age, and I think it even carries on now, this is pretty common. But there would be the certain time of the evening where a taxi was suggested that you got in the taxi because they were going on to other forms of entertainment that they didn't think you were going to like. Or the fact that pretty much all the corporate entertaining happened to be on the golf course. If you didn't play golf, then you weren't coming.
Yeah.
So I think lots of times really in my early career where I was the only woman in the team, and I seemed to constantly go from one team to another and still be the only woman on the team until I got to a position where I was the number two in the team and I could pick the people in the team.
Okay. And do you find that's different now? As a generalization, do you find that you see less teams of just men or with one sort of woman in them? Do you find that it's improved?
I think in pockets. I mean, I joined HGI last year and I was once again faced with a room full of men. And I was like, oh, okay. And I thought we had some women here, and I did found one other woman that was on the management team. I could bring her into the room. But then again, you know, we had some vacancies come up and I set about changing that dynamic because I just don't think it's fair that you only have half your customers or your employee population represented in a senior forum. So I've been lucky that I've got myself into positions where I've been able to influence the hiring, shall we say, and change the dynamic. But yeah, I seem to have gone from one area to another and been the only woman in the team.
I think that's a very interesting point, actually, because you look in the sort of the higher, more senior ranks in companies, there are fewer women, and therefore the ability to recruit talent that might look a bit more like yourself is limited, isn't it? And that kind of adds to this dynamic where we don't see enough senior women in roles within companies. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? Until you get there, you can't hire your talent, and until, you know, and it's sort of a bit swings and roundabouts, isn't it? So how have you kind of gone about, you know, following your career with this idea of being yourself? And when did you really start to do that? Because you have to be quite brave sometimes, I think, to start being yourself. I would say that my experience is similar to yours in the early stages. And I spent a lot of time trying to work out how I should dress, how I should sound like, being slightly ashamed is probably the right word, of my background and sort of, you know, different educational background that I had. And so I think you have to be quite, find some courage from somewhere to start to be yourself. When did that happen for you?
I think I've never particularly aspired to be a sheep in my life. I was always the kid that was in the class that was a girls' school. I went to a girls' state school. But I was the one in the class that liked the Smiths and the Cure as opposed to Duran Duran and Spandau. So I've never been particularly frightened to sort of follow my own path. And I think I was pretty much encouraged to be that way. So I think that's probably helped. I think I've also been quite aware of my personal values and not wanting to compromise them. So, you know, where things were a compromise or I felt were a compromise, and I've stuck to my guns really.
And as you sort of on your career journey, did you have people that gave you sound advice about how to be yourself, or did you kind of get to that point and thinking, right, I'm now happy in this persona. What I reflect in my day-to-day business environment is me. I can now help other people learn from the stuff that I've gone through, and perhaps help guide them a bit more.
I think a bit of both. I think, you know, to some extent, being the only woman on the team did enable me to be something different to perhaps the rest of the team. And I've probably played on that permission to not be the same.
Yeah.
In a funny way. So, you know, you could stand out more. You know, I went on a training course. I went on a 2-year training course. I was the only woman on that, and there was 17 guys and me, and they all knew my name. Yeah. I couldn't remember all of their names after like a 1-hour meeting, but they all knew my name. So I think sometimes you can exploit that situation, and you know, you are different. You are not one of the guys. So there isn't necessarily a rule book out there that you need to necessarily follow. If you go along with the premise that actually I'm not one of the guys, I'm not going to be one of the guys, I'm going to be me, and you haven't got anything else to judge me against in this team, so off I'm going to go on my merry way. Having said that, I've had some good mentors along the way. I've had some not so good ones as well, but I have had some good ones. And I think probably what struck me about the good ones was that they were being themselves. You know, they were genuine. They weren't anybody else. And I think this sort of like, do we feel like we have to come to work and be somebody else compared to what we are at home? I don't like that. And I find I haven't got the time or the appetite to do that.
Yeah.
I'd rather just be consistent. And I think, you know, what I've then done is to try and encourage people to bring, when I had it as one of my last teams that I managed an 800 strong team within Allianz for a number of years. And one of my mottos there was be ourselves as part of our team vision. Because I think it's really important if people can bring their whole selves to work and not feel, oh, I need to leave that bit at home because I don't really feel that that's going to be accepted or people are going to comment about that. No, it's a sort of true diversity in all forms. And for me, I've always felt that talent doesn't come in a prescribed shape.
Nope.
Or a set template. And most of the teams I've had, you know, they've ended up being very mixed in terms of, you know, country, nationality, sexuality, as far as I've known. Some people share, some people don't. Ethnicity, you know, age, experience. And I've really, really tried to build teams that do represent lots of different viewpoints. I think that makes life fun.
And absolutely. And I think, you know, work is much more fun when you have a genuine, you know, people from different spaces, and a real sort of balance of inclusion, I think is fantastic. It just makes work much more fun. But, you know, and I agree with you entirely that you should be able to be the same at work as you are at home. I think that's really important. So what is it then that we've struggled with I'd like to think it's better now. And I genuinely think it's better now that people have more space and the ability and perhaps feel that they have the permission to be themselves.
Mm.
What has stopped us in the past from being able to be ourselves? And what do you think has changed that's allowed that to be, that we've got much more accepting and really we understand that, you know, we want people to be themselves because that's when you're the most successful. I really believe that. I think you get real success when you reflect yourself in the role that you're in. So what do you think those two drivers are, you know, from that perspective?
I think there's a conformity sort of dimension, you know, do you fit in?
Yep.
Do you fit in? And, you know, do you look, I mean, you talked about dress earlier on, do you look the part?
Yeah.
And if we sort of like, if we sort of both look at each other now, we probably dress a lot less conventionally
totally
than we would have done 10, 12, 20 years ago. And part of that is a confidence about where we are and and that our abilities act as a greater advertisement than, for example, what our clothes are going to do for us.
Yeah.
But I think certainly in the early years, you know, you felt that you had to dress a certain way. And if you didn't dress a certain way, were you considered respectable enough to be taken out to meet brokers or clients? You know, were you effectively want to be on put on show? Now, there's the other alternative to that when I was younger, which was, you know, you were doing your reinsurance renewals and you got told to put the tight skirt on and the lipstick, which I wouldn't necessarily want to go back to. But I think part of it is, I suppose, as the digital world has sort of moved on, and we have got, you know, repetitive things, you know, being either roboticized or AI'd or whatever you wanted to do with it, then I think then what becomes more valued in terms of our employees and our employee base is creativity.
Yep.
And I think then creativity and individualism, in terms of how can you think differently about something, has become more important. And one way in which people express creativity or individualism can be through what you choose to wear,
yep,
and how you choose to portray yourself. So I think probably we've come away from this attitude of around conformity being, you know, we just want everybody to sort of sit down, process, get through that piece of work, to actually, how can we think about something differently? How creative can we be? Innovation. These are all seen as very positive words in our current culture.
Yeah.
But they're also associated with quite artistic creative. And if we think artistic creative, then we think, you know, more flamboyant dressing or more individualistic dressing. So I think the women have got this. I think the men are a bit slow in catching up to this.
Okay. Okay. So if we take this sort of world we're working in at the moment, because I have a few thoughts around this, where we're now communicating in by whatever medium, Zoom or whoever it is that we're using, you know, and you can have up to, you know, I was in a meeting the other day, there were sort of 30 of us on a conference call, and you could see everybody. And even if you have your team meetings and there's 8 of you sitting, you know, around
we had 98 the other week.
98, well, there you go.
Call. So 98.
And I know there's been a lot of memes in that going around about people's backgrounds and stuff, but it has put people in a different position, hasn't it? You know, I think you see people in much more real terms in on many levels, in that they're not in a suit and tie. You know, I'm not in a dress or whatever it would be, not in a suit and tie. You get a sense of who they are perhaps a little bit more by a medium that's separating you. And I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Fascinating. Aspect.
It's fascinating. I've
seen so many children of my team, you know, some are willing, you know, wanted that they come fly past. Other ones are just sort of can't leave parents alone. and so, you know, I probably know quite a few more of my team's children by name now than I certainly did before lockdown. And I think, yes, it's funny, isn't it? It's taken quite a big barrier away. You know, you are in each other's homes. And I like the fact that I'm seeing people in their dress down.
With beards. Not us, by the way.
With beards, lockdown haircuts. Some of them have been quite extreme.
I've had a few instances where
any of the ladies.
You know, people have purchased the hair clippers on Amazon and have attempted to do their own. And that's just not. There are hairdressers are trained for a reason, everybody. Okay, it's not just... They really are key members of society.
Yeah, there's definitely some bushy beards going on out there. But yeah, it is like you said, it's seeing people in their own environment. And some of it has thrown up some surprises for me. It's like, okay, I wouldn't imagine that they would live in a place like that or vice versa. I've been astonished by some things in a positive way. I thought, wow, that's amazing. As they're getting to know their children, that whole sort of work life thing is frayed and blurred at the edges, hasn't it?
Yes,
really,
it has. And I think I think if we get this right about how we sort of reopen our working lives and our you know, our society and whatever again, that we keep some of these things that I think have had such a positive force on these 8, 9, 10 weeks that we've been sitting interacting with people in a different way. You know, do you think, I think maybe it's broken some learned behaviours, because I think we're in this market, we can be very much creatures of habit and our environment. And I think that can often I also think that your environment, the fabric that's around you in your environment when you're working, can have an impact on how you communicate with people, how you can enable to be yourself in work. And this has really blown all that away to a certain extent, I think. And so do you think people that maybe being more relaxed about some attitudes now because they're seeing people differently, and see lots of very senior people looking very chilled these days, aren't they, and sort of less intimidating than perhaps they used to to be. Do you think these behaviours will continue, that we won't sort of learn them and then unlearn them again? I'd like to think that we'll come out of this taking on board those changes somehow and continue them when we start to move back to a more normal, whatever that is, working balance.
I would like to. I'd like to see some of this stay around. I think also, let's not kid ourselves. We're not going to be going back to any sort of normal as it used to be for some time yet. I mean, I know that there's quite a few people out there that have said in our market, because let's face it, I think of other markets, we've been very successful at moving to a work from home policy, and 100% of my team are working from home successfully. And that's shared around the market. So that's a great success story. You know, if you think about, there's probably a minimum number of people being furloughed, people all paying our taxes, the government are going to need the taxes, and we're all continuing to trade. So it's a great success story, I think, for insurance. But I think if I hear, you know, some people are saying it won't be till September, I think that's actually quite realistic, because if we've got no childcare options for a whole swathe of people, then what are they going to do, you know? And if you can't have your grandparents looking after them, or family friends, and not everybody has that luxury of having somebody nearby. So reality could be that we're in this till mid-September. And then do I really see that the government or the Mayor of London are going to want everybody on a commuting zone that's, you know, a window of 8 till 9? I think they're going to be saying, you know, can you space out your commute 7 till 10, 4 till 7? So I think we'll get this concept around flexible hours. I think, you know, from the conversations that we're having, I think quite a few people will want to retain at least a couple of days a week working from home. And they'll probably enjoy it that much better when they haven't got kids to look after as well at home. Because that's not the normal. And I think, so I'm hoping that we can cling on to some of this. And they said it can act as a bit of a shock. I think one area that it's certainly acting as a shock is around the sort of electronic placement. You know, because this face-to-face thing was a London luxury. It's a bit of an anachronism of the time compared to, you know, where we're all trading. But, you know, the stats in terms of, you know, how PPL, for example, has risen over the last week, it's incredible. I think it was like 800 a week, and now it's 3,500 placements a week. So I think, you know, that digital shift, I don't see people going back from that digital shift.
No, I can't either. Don't think you can put that genie back in any kind of bottle at all. I think that's...
And people were ready for it. People were ready for it anyway.
I think we've adapted very well. And so in the light of, you know, of perhaps these changed behaviours, you know, will continue, do you think that this idea of being yourself in the workplace is one that we'll have to worry about less? Is it a dynamic that you think we have to make sure that we keep a weather eye on, to make sure that we don't slip back into some older, sort of less creative habits than we had before? Do you think the things that we faced perhaps when we were younger?
I think you need to keep an eye on it. I think you need to keep an eye, because I think there's a certain amount of vulnerability tied up with being yourself.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
And, you know, not everybody wants to particularly put that on the display, and it takes a bit of bravery. So I think, you know, probably encouraging the guys actually just as much as the women to not necessarily, you know, feel they've got to follow the herd, to have their own voice. I think it's something that I think it's part of good practice, really, in terms of, you know, you want all of your employees to contribute, and you want them to contribute genuinely. So for me, it's something that will probably stay on my radar until I retire, because I want to hear what people really think. I don't want a filter. So I want to really understand their position, what they're really thinking, because But for me, otherwise, if I get the filtered version, I've got some sort of diluted thing that I'm not quite sure is one or the other.
Yeah. If you were going to give advice to anybody, and you know, and I know that you do, you're an active mentor. I don't know how many mentees you have at the moment, Claire.
But I don't bother counting.
No.
It's a fluid roll call.
Do you ever find yourself giving out some certain kinds of advice about how to build your confidence? Because a lot of this is linked to confidence as well, isn't it? And that confidence of being yourself and being able to express yourself in your business life. Is there anything that you kind of find yourself consistently telling people?
Having a bit more self-belief. I quite often find it's almost the most talented people seem to have the littlest faith in their own, you know, their own capabilities. And you know, sometimes it's been conversations of like, well, you know, what do you, you know, I'll ask them, I say, so what do you think of your boss, you know? And generally it's, oh yeah, they're really good and they're really sharp and da 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 da. Okay. They picked you. So if you don't even have faith, if you don't have faith, actually somebody who's got more experience than you has obviously seen something in you.
Yep.
And maybe if you don't have faith in yourself, but you have faith in that other individual, maybe just trust them for a while until you can grow into it.
Yeah.
And then you feel a bit happier with yourself. So, you know, so those have been some of the conversations that I've had with some people. And I think other times it's just, okay, get people to do some reflection. Now, what have you changed? What have you achieved in this last year?
Yeah.
Because I think you've done X, Y, and Z from what you've told me. Well, again, use that as a bit of more of a solid foundation for your confidence.
Yeah. And I think that's a point in there that you made about looking at who's hired you, for example, because how people see you is not always how you see or feel yourself, is it? And so actually, you know, and I think as a generalization, but we're going to go there, I think we're very self-critical as women on ourselves, and being ready for opportunities and being ready to take a next step career-wise. But people see us differently than we sometimes see ourselves. I think it's, if you can get a handle on that, that's a really, can be, in my experience, it's a positive thing to do. It's a really positive thing to do, because I don't think people are there to hope, you know, break you down. I think people there generally want to build you up. And so it is worth taking that moment to sense check yourself, isn't it, about how you're really being perceived, as opposed to that, you know, you're letting things live with you that you don't need to.
I think one of the other sort of things that I've probably asked the most in my mentoring conversations is, what's the downside about what you're thinking about?
Yeah.
Because honestly, I'd say 99 times out of 100, they cannot come up with a downside. And I said, so I think there's this perceived risk or a perceived heightened fear of risk that's not relative. So they might say, well, you know, I want to propose this and I want to do that. And then I said, so what's the downside? The downside is they say no.
And
they might be saying no because actually it's a good idea, but it's not the right timing.
And that's, I think, the point. It's not always a no. It's just not right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what is the real downside of you coming with a creative business proposal and sharing with them and showing that you are thinking about the business in a different way, perhaps to your colleagues, or something that hasn't been discussed before? What's the downside in that? And very, very often, or asking for a job. I had someone come into me once and she'd been sitting in on interviews, and she said, the more these interviews have gone on, the more I realised I could do this job and I want to do this job. I said, well, what are you going to do about it then? And she's sort of looking at me, well, you know. I said, so what you're going to do today, you're going to book a time in with that person, and what are you going to say? Well, I might like, I said, no. I'm going to say, we're going to walk in, we're going to go, I've been sitting on these interviews, I've come to the conclusion, I can do that job, I want that job.
Yeah.
And so they did that, and the person had a little laugh and said, okay, then let's talk about it. And she got the job.
That's fantastic.
But it's just that.
That's
another downside.
That's another point that you make really well there, is language and how we talk about ourselves. Because I think there are ways that we can be better about talking about our skills or experience or talent, the things we like to do, in a way that is open and honest and with integrity, that people get a sense of who you are, but you use positive language about yourself. I'm not talking about bigging it up, saying I'm the best thing. I'm talking about if somebody says to you, can you do this? Oh, yes, I can do that. And I can do it because of those things. Not like, well, let me
I think
you're thinking.
It's attractive for people if you're passionate about something.
It is, yeah.
And they can feel that there is not just an intellectual exercise, but there's also an emotional connection for you. And that goes beyond the pure words. The other thing that I also say to a lot of my people is that, you know, telepathy was not one of the skills that required in the job application process, right?
Yeah.
And this goes two ways. So I'm not going to be able to tell what you're thinking. You're not able to tell what I'm thinking unless we actually share it. Yeah. So unless you're clear about your language, and like you said, you're going in there and saying, I want that. I really want that. You know, that would be right up my street. I know I can do that. I think I'd be great at this. It's not about boasting. It's not, but it is showing that you're passionate about something. And I think we're all, I think it's the easiest thing for a manager to give something to somebody when they ask them in a way that I want something. And if it's in your gift to give it, you naturally want to give it.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
It's not obfuscated. It's not unclear. Someone comes into you and says, I would like to do a job in this country. It's like, oh, okay, I might have a position coming up. Okay, I know that person wants a job in that country. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
If you go in with the maybes and the mights and the is it possible that, it doesn't bring that passion over in the same way.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, the telepathy thing, you know, if nobody knows that's what you're going to do, it's never going to happen, is it? That, you know, that thing that you might have a real niche passion for or feel that you've got something, if you don't, people don't know. They don't know. They're never going to guess, are they?
No, they're never going to guess. It's going to stay hidden underneath that bushel forever.
Which I think links it back to, you know, finding that level where you can, you know, bring yourself to work, find you a level that you're happy to be yourself at work, because people, you know, they can choose to what they want to share and how they want to be, but have that ability.
And a culture that fits you.
And a culture that fits you at work. And then tell people what you want to do, because once you feel confident enough to do that, you will start to talk to people about your ambitions or the areas that you might like to move in. Or I don't know anything about that. Can I go and work over there for a bit? And it's about being able to articulate that, isn't it? I think in the workplace. And you do it much better when you are able to really represent who you are at work. I think that's...
And I think culture is really key though when you do go for a job.
Yeah,
it's not something that you should dismiss or think is, you know, one of these sort of airy fairy intangibles. I think particularly if you're making career changes. I mean, I made my first company change last year after 30 odd years. Believe you me, it was something I looked at quite a lot, because I realised through my working life just how important culture actually is to enable you to have the environment in which to thrive.
And that's a really interesting, because you were, you know, very rare to meet somebody these days, Claire, that's been in one place for such a long time, I would say. And so you were clearly extremely happy there. And so the move to HDI, into this, the MD role, and culture clearly plays a big part of it. Have you brought culture from one place to another, or did you find that the culture there was a real fit for you anyway, so that's why you went there?
Well, both German companies, which there is a certain underlying cultural element to that, that there is a consistency. I think there's a consistency around sort of ethics and the way of working. So in one way, I was comfortable. I had an expectation around what that culture would look like. Yeah. And I was happy with my previous culture. So I was like, okay, I can feel this has got a similar sort of bedrock in terms of how people will perform. And then I suppose the other element is the, you know, I've had the opportunity to run some really big teams, and you create like a micro climate within those teams, and that's what you should do, because you try and create a climate that's something that enables success for your particular team within the I don't know who is trying to FaceTime within the overarching structure. So I think, you know, that was something I was able to sort of bring in here, was my ideas around what an inclusive workplace should look like, and how individuals should count, if I put it that way.
I think that's a wonderful point. And I'm going to say that this bit of the conversation, I think that's such a great point to leave it on, that individuals count. And I, you know, blimey, that's a mantra that we could all adopt, I think, in so many things. But that's such a great way to finish. But I do have one last question for you, just to finish on, and perhaps we'll get to know a bit more about you. So you like music. I know that you like music. Yeah. So if you were going to design an album cover, all right, what would that photo be on the front? And what would your cover song be?
probably the album cover would be my happy place, which is my field. I've always liked green spaces.
And is it just a field? Is it wildflowers and daisies?
It's got a few thistles as well, but not too many daisies. But it does have a magnificent oak tree in the middle, which is just spectacular. Whatever season that you're in, it's one of those things that you look at, and it is a thing of beauty. It's probably about 200 years old, and it's just stunning. So probably in there. I was just trying to think, if I was doing song covers, probably I did it my way.
Well, that sounds perfect.
Other than that, I'd probably go back to my 80s musical roots and
The Cure,
from The Smiths or The Cure or something. The Cure. Like that.
Yeah, that's perfect. Well, I'm going to say thank you very much for sharing all that this afternoon. It's been really fascinating. We've kind of gone, you know, covered quite a wide spectrum of stuff, but I hope we brought it back to being yourself and this idea, particularly that you expounded so well, that individuals count. And I love that. So thank you very much, Claire, for this afternoon, and look forward to sharing this with everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.